This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the show. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Patricia, who is feeling a little under the weather today. We hope she feels better. Glad to be here. Beautiful, bright, and sunny second day of spring. Love this weather. And we're going to get a bit of freezing rain coming. And once we get through that, some high temperatures tomorrow. It is right around the corner. I can feel the melt coming for all those people who have had it with the snow. And we've got a lot going on the show today. We're getting ready, of course, for the visit of the U.S. president and others. It's always a bit of a production, to say the least. And that is one of our big five stories.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at Work. Big five stories.
Huge news, big five stories. Chris Holsky's here in studio. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm looking outside to see if there are any military choppers flying over us yet, and the answer is no.
The answer is
no. Not quite. Could see them today, though.
Yes. yeah, we're going to see lots of that. And John Krupe's downstairs in the CTV newsroom. Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to start with Doug Ford yesterday. Interesting.
His haircut?
No, we'll get to that later. Brilliant. Well, actually, you know what? We can talk about both. Let's start with okay, you started me off. Let's start with the haircut. This is his socks. This is his Vanity Fair cover. So what am I talking about?
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau's buzz in the early days that his critics couldn't do anything about, that his supporters absolutely loved, that was not a liability, was a boost. Do we have Doug Ford? Yeah. Here is Doug Ford talking about why his hair is cut so short.
Every guy out there understands this. So you go into the barber, and I went down south for a few days, so I go into Walmart. I'm a cheap son of a gun. So I see the, you know, $15 haircut or whatever. I walk in there, and, you know, I said, I just want a trim, just a little trim. And every guy knows what number they are. Number one, the lower you get, the more they take off their hair. So I'm about a number four. It's just, you know, a little bit of a trim. So I sit down in the chair. This guy grabs my hair like this and starts shaking. I'm thinking, you know, the problem was, Colin, he didn't speak English and I didn't speak Spanish. So all of a sudden he pulls out the shaver and zoom, right across the thing. He must have used not even a one, a zero.
Like, on television, it's just like, who can't relate to that, Chris Holsky?
Doug Ford doesn't know quattro?
Yeah, and you can make fun of it all you want. It's kind of like the cheesecake thing. It's kind of like, but it's
a
better,
going
than,
down
it's
a
better
search.
Than that.
Yeah.
It's better than that. And if you're going to defeat this guy, you have to have a person in the leadership who can pull that off and not fake it and have people buy it.
Yeah, if I'm going to compliment Doug Ford on anything, it's how he comes off in moments like this, in those interviews, where those bits where he does have to show a bit of personality, because honestly, he does shine.
Yeah. John Krupe, it drives liberals and others nuts because they want to talk about the green belt. They want to talk about stag and doe. They want to talk about unspent healthcare money. And all of that's important and in the news stream. But that's tough to beat.
Yeah, after he has that explanation of why his hair is so short, the reporters are saying, and on the green belt, it kind of deflates the next question almost.
Totally does.
Yeah.
It totally does. And they say around him that, and look, I'm not, like, he's got his faults and he knows he's got his faults. He's made mistakes and then he comes back, you know? And I think overall, this fits into the question for conservatives. Like, Pierre Poilievre is not like that.
No.
He is not like that. He is a pugilist. He is a fierce fighter, right? And so I wonder for federal conservatives out there, how relatable can Pierre Poilievre pull that off? Does he need to pull that off in order to win big swaths of the country and take it away from the liberals?
Well, there's a big difference in their positions right now, because I know you're talking about Trudeau and the success that he showed in the
yes.
election campaign going into that. And with a long period, that was with, again, same similar situation that Poilievre is in now, facing a leader who has been in power for some time. Doug Ford, when he's trying to disarm people, he's doing it from a position of authority. He's not trying to take over. He doesn't need to show anger in the way that things are running because he's actually running the show at this time.
The hardest position in Canadian politics is the opposition leader because people see you in a certain light. And when you're the Premier of Ontario or the Prime Minister of the country, people see you in a different light.
Well, look at the way he handled the Rouleau inquiry.
Yes.
That he abandoned Ontario. Look how he handled that. Yeah, and he just used the example. Toronto, the police chief and the mayor handled it one way. The police chief and the mayor in Ottawa handled it another way.
And they're both gone. And he made that point. Yeah. He made that point.
So,
Chris, I cut you off.
That's okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's all right.
You got it?
I'm gone. I got it out. Yes.
So the reason that I compare him to Trudeau, which a lot of people would be just like, give me a break. You got to remember this. Think about this. How did Trudeau win? Early days, time for change, happy days are here again, you know, sunny ways.
Snitch line by the Tories.
Right. He was able to transcend. And the other thing he did that people forget, he brought in millions of new voters who were excited about him. Did Doug Ford do that? In parts of Toronto, the answer is yes. He is being painted as this ideologue, conservative, you know, right-wing crazy guy. And you go into the apartment buildings in Scarborough and they know his name, just like his brother. So strategically trying to go up against that, like he's just had a really bad run, right? Stag and Doe,
Greenbelt. I'd argue things connected with the inquiry, including some of the ways that he answered questions yesterday, have gone very poorly for
the inquiry. And you know what? One of his numbers is above 41%.
Yep.
Like, and some say it's even higher than that. So I just think, you know, a lesson for opposition parties, and we can move on, but a lesson for opposition parties, if you've got a personality-driven leader you're up against, you've got to find a personality-driven leader yourself that connects with voters in a way that can challenge that. And I wish Yasser Naqvi luck if he's in, but boy, the Liberal Party of Ontario has a steep hill to climb. Can they do it,
but sometimes,
John Kruppi?
Sometimes time for a change Trump's personality, right?
Yes, it does.
So
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think Trudeau is finding out, or will find out maybe, that you can't really push that rock up the hill anymore if you're facing time for change and fatigue with you as a personality. So personality-driven parties do so at their own peril. Okay. One of the stories we're looking at, Uber says Ottawa has the worst passengers in Canada. What is this about, John Kruppi? Is this just... We rate badly as passengers? Is this real?
Okay, so I see this headline. I see the story. I read the story. And is this another one of those list stories where you can put any city as the worst? And in this case, it's Ottawa. I give it short shrift.
I do too.
Yeah,
we shouldn't be talking about it if I follow my own advice.
Yeah.
Like these ranking stories to get names of companies in the news. And of course, we lap it up just because it's a talkable story, and here we are on talk radio.
It's a service that everybody uses right now. Just like we'll try to remember that the next time Tim Hortons ends up bringing some kind of remark, or brings up a new product, and we talk about it anyway. Uber, there is something that kind of bothers me about this list because they provided they've got 1 through 5, they've got their cities up there, and they really don't provide any information on metrics whatsoever. So they say that Ottawa has the lowest user rating. There's really no information provided as to why we rank last. There are some issues they point up saying, hey, if you want to improve your rating, then clean up your mess. Make sure you're at your ride on time. But they don't specifically say what exactly Ottawa is doing that's got the more negative fervor.
Was the survey done during the convoy?
Yeah, it could be. It could have skewed the numbers. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, getting ready for Joe Biden and others to come. It's a big event, and we'll talk about what these things achieve. Of course, the first trip for U.S. presidents used to be right to Canada, and we kind of moved away from that. Does that matter? It matters more to us than it does to them, I think. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Patricia Bowl on Ottawa at Work. Stay with us. Population growth in Canada in 1 year has gone up more than 1 million people for the first time ever. Canada's population now estimated at basically 40 million people, 1,050,000 people from January 1 to January 23. It's 2.7% growth. That is close to the largest growth, which was 1957, 3.3%. Yes, 96% of it, Chris Holsky, coming from international migration, immigration, which includes refugees, migrants, and immigrants. Extraordinary numbers.
Yes, and that's going to keep climbing. That's what the prediction has been over the course of the next several decades. We're going to see a level of population surge in Canada, and where are they going to go? A lot of them are going to end up in cities quite like ours. And this is something that has been weighing on my mind the last few weeks in Ottawa. When I see these figures, know that we're going to need an increased level of housing in our community. What we've seen over the course of the past few weeks, what we saw in the latest update on Monday, you take a development like what's been going on in Orleans, where we had some neighborhood resistance to that one
yes.
big block that's going to have not enough parking, I think, for every single tenant that goes there. A lot of people were bringing up the argument and the suggestion saying, well, wouldn't this be more suited to be closer to an LRT station? And I'd say, you know, you're right. However, that doesn't eliminate the need for affordable housing in that neighborhood. There needs to be more housing everywhere in places like Ottawa. There needs to be a lot of a transformational thought. And when you see a population bump like this and projections showing that it could accelerate even further over the next 10 years, the next 20 years, there has to be a lot more thought when it comes to urban planning about these kind of accommodations.
A few years ago, that city council may have shut that down because of the opposition, and they went the opposite way today. Housing seems to be trumping all. John Krupe, what's your take on this?
I'm going to be a little bit more patriotic. And Graham, you said 40 million. I never thought we'd get to 40 million.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's negative. I think it has wide societal implications that I'm not so sure we've fully thought through. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to be just patriotic. And I know there's going to be housing issues. And obviously, most of the refugees or new Canadians, you know, It's Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, right? That's always the pressure points, and Ottawa to some degree. But I'm going to say, guess what? Canada, it's the greatest country in the world, and that's why our population's increasing so dramatically.
Here.
I'm stunned. I would have assumed.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, we were nowhere near a 1950s growth. This is what Statistics Canada says. The previous record population growth in 1957 was related to the high number of births during the post-war baby boom and the high immigration of refugees following the Hungarian Revolution of 1956. That was 3.3%. That's only 0.6% off what we hit in 2022 up to January 1, 2023. That's before the federal government announced an increase in immigration that will exceed 500,000 quite quickly in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's amazing. And we're seeing this level of policy, but this, again, this is something that has been predicted. I'm not sure that many people expected it to happen this quickly within this certain time frame, even though you do have to factor in some additional circumstances, again, going on right now. How many people are living in Canada because of what's happening in Ukraine, for example?
Ukraine war, Syrian conflict, all of those things play a role. But if we're up, they're up, the population's up 0.7% in one quarter, with a total growth of 2.7%.
Bring it on.
What I like, if you think about, okay, so if we increase even more, John Krupe, to your point and your patriotism, which I appreciate, think about what happened post baby boom. Community colleges were created.
Yeah.
Medicare was expanded and actually created. The 1960s boom in basically the society that we now have happened because of the baby boom. There are legitimate questions out of this now. Are we going to see a new baby boom fueled 97% by people from other parts of the world, which partially the 1950s boom was fueled by? And what does that mean going forward for our cities, for our transit, for our schools, for our suburbs, for our healthcare? Extraordinary. Like, look, hey, if you're concerned about this, you don't want it going the other way. You don't want a shrinking population because that's a disaster all around. What about those larger questions, though, John? Do you think that city governments, provincial governments, are fully prepared for this kind of growth?
Well, you know, we've had these warnings. We've had these smart city summits. We've had these warnings as, you know, how to grow your city smarter. But the problem is we've had the pandemic, and the pandemic is our downtowns are not the same. So there's all kinds of new equations and metrics, if you want to use that word, regarding this population growth. And I don't know if our governments are prepared for it. And they better be.
Right. Yeah. A reminder that whether it's this generation or last generations, whether it's the Italians, the Irish, Asian immigration, the Rideau Canal, and what happened in our history there, immigrants come here and most of them work incredibly hard and take multiple jobs and start businesses. Yes, there are pressures when you have this kind of population growth, but much of it is positive. John Krupe, I appreciate this. Thank you.
See you later.
All right. That's John Krupe downstairs in the CTV newsroom. Chris Holsky off to the CTV newsroom. Be next to me. Your
memory is ecstasy. Oh, I miss you. This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia, who's feeling a bit under the weather. She will be back, we hope, tomorrow, and hope you're having a good day. We are all getting ready for what is usually and always a massive affair, even if it's just for a brief few hours. When the President of the United States arrives anywhere, he comes with a significant level of support, to say the least, and it's not just the beast. Someone who knows a fair bit about this, of course, is Chris Lewis, the former OPP commissioner and CTV public safety analyst. He joins us now. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Talk about behind the scenes as much as you can.
Sure.
What doesn't the public see that's involved here when you've got someone of this stature coming into a city that's used to heads of state and heads of government, but when it's the president, it's something different?
It really is, Graham. He is the biggest. He is the biggest protected person security team in the entire world. And so there's so much goes on behind the scenes. There would have been a joint intelligence group established weeks ago, monitoring all potential protest activity, any potential threats against the president. Their military aircraft in the air 24/7. The whole team that landed there days ahead of time with the Beast and all kinds of other vehicles and all kinds of support personnel, that's all in place here. And at the same time, a similar team's forming at the next location he will go.
Mm-hmm.
And so it all arrives, and then they leapfrog from kind of security event to security event. But huge planning involved. The entire route has to be searched from the airport into town. All the sites that people from his team are staying have to be searched and secured so that, you know, they know it's safe when they get into their rooms and on and on. And the ability to respond to any potential threats along the way, whether that be protests, watching all the streets and intersections with cameras, and having officers ready to respond to any of those situations. It's phenomenal.
It's bigger than a Rolling Stones tour because there's more at stake and the security is
right
higher.
On.
But it's that kind of leapfrog thing where every logistic is checked and rechecked. A little while ago, I finished a book on the history of the Secret Service. And, of course, the lowest point was Dallas and the death of John F. Kennedy. And much of the infrastructure
right
we're seeing sprang from that, because obviously that ended open car travel, that boosted the Secret Service around the president, and also heightened the concern around international travel. And for those people who say, come on, get over yourselves, you know, the last thing any country wants is to make history in that way and have a president vulnerable on their soil. And I know law enforcement takes that incredibly seriously on the ground here as well.
For sure. And it's the RCMP or the priority police service for international visits like that. But of course, the city of Ottawa, huge component with the city police, the OPP, and then on both sides of the border in the National Capital Regional, they all have to be linked in with the Secret Service and all the planners who do this full time. And this would have been in the works for months, really putting this plan together. So it's a tremendous undertaking. I was there in the command post, or there'd be a big police command post with all the agencies represented in Ottawa, and with the video feeds to all the locations along the travel route from the airport in. And I was in there for the Obama visit years ago, which was significant. It was his first visit out of the country, new president. And just watching everything that happened along the way is amazing. And the average person would really have no concept, nor should they.
Nor should they. And much of it has to be secret. And what, if you can, what surprises you most about these visits behind the scenes?
It's just the enormity of it. It's just because, I mean, it's not just the president and, you know, his chief of staff or, you know, some sort of Secret Service delegation around him. There's hundreds and hundreds of people that travel with him. And the fact that all those vehicles are brought in, positioned, and he lands and gets in them and off they go. And at the same time, that's all formed up at his next stop. He gets in the plane and goes, and all those others, you know, are shipped back or onto the next location. And there's a whole group waiting for him at the next stop. You know, imagine the 24/7 planning that goes on by the Secret Service of all these partner agencies all over the world as this occurs.
Yeah. What simple question that some people out there might have, why do they have to bring his car? Why can't Canada and other countries provide a secure vehicle for the President of the United States?
Well, they could. It's just that's what they want to do. There's no doubt that that could be easily or similarly replicated anywhere. But that's what they do. And so they have a number. You hear Air Force One, you hear Marine One with the helicopters. There's several of those helicopters. It's just whichever one he's in for that moment is called Marine One. And same with the Beast. There's several of them.
Right.
But the one he's in at the time is, you know, Car One, basically, for the purposes of that operation.
Yeah. And anytime I'm around Americans, I lived there for a short time covering California, and it strikes you as a Canadian how big the country is, how important the country is. It doesn't make us unimportant, but you realize the size difference right away. We are the smaller sibling right next door. And these kinds of events bring that home in a very big way.
They absolutely do. And I was there as well for the when George Bush went to Montebello years ago.
Of course, mountain biking.
Yeah, well, they had the, so you got the SQ, the OPP, all the boats on the river, choppers in the air, 24/7. There's actually AWACS planes and fighter jets in the air the whole time the president is in Ottawa. So that's going on nonstop. And then there'll be choppers closer to the ground that people will see and hear. But there's a whole apparatus above that that they will never see. And God knows what else that we don't even really know about on tops of buildings and whatnot in the area. Huge for a 24-hour visit, for sure.
Do you remember, I gotta go, but do you remember, I know he's still a mountain biker and he brought his mountain bike and went for a ride. Do you remember what kind of, are security people worried about that when that kind of thing happens, or do you just keep your distance and make sure, because he's so used to doing it?
Yeah, he's so used to doing it, and he's just surrounded by people that can do it as well.
Yeah,
our premier, female premier, I can't even think her name off the top of my head right now, but when she was elected, she was a runner, and so we
Kathleen
had a security team. Yeah, Kathleen Wynne.
Yes,
God, I lost it.
That's all right.
We had a team of security people that could run with her all the time.
OPP want to be on detail with the premier.
You better be a
runner. All right, Chris, thanks for this. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Take care. All the best.
That's Chris Lewis, CTV public safety analyst and former OPP commissioner. Talking about the Biden visit, we're going to take a quick break. Look, we're getting a lot of texts on immigration, obviously. I know it touches a nerve. I just want to address something. Your guy on radio just asked for an open discussion on the exploding immigration here in Canada, but made it clear if you don't like immigrants, don't bother texting in. Why would he say that? This is an open discussion. CFRA has gone so far to the left, it's pathetic. Look, what I said was, if you're opposed to immigration policy, please text in. If you think this number is too high, please text in. What I'm saying is, you all know what this debate brings out. And what I mean is, if you're going to text in about how, you know, people who aren't white are taking over and it's an issue of race, and like, you're just not going to get on the air, right? Because it doesn't add to the conversation. If you're opposed to this immigration level and you don't agree with the Trudeau government making it even larger, and you think there are societal problems attached with a population growth like this, those are all legitimate points. And if you make them clearly, I will try to get them on. My point is, if you make racist comments about immigrants, I'm not going to put you on. That's all. That's all. We're back in a moment. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bull.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia. I hope you're having a good day. It is Web Wednesday time. Is that what this is, Michael Woods?
That's what they call it.
They call it Web Wednesday. So
because
you come
we
in
love
and,
we love alliterations around here.
We do. You know. Who doesn't love alliterations? My little pet peeve with our team downstairs and upstairs.
We tease Graham with alliteration sometimes.
I find alliteration when it's overdone just a bit too much.
Yeah.
But Web Wednesdays is fine.
Okay, good. Thanks.
What is driving our website today on both CFRA and CTV News? We've got quite a few big stories, obviously getting ready for Biden as well. But this Via Rail story yesterday, just so strange.
It's a bizarre one, and if you haven't seen the video of this, that I recommend going to our website to check it out, ctvnewsottawa.ca. But basically, there's a man who was traveling back to Toronto. He was waiting in the Via Rail station, Ottawa's train station, and he decided, and he was actually taking the bus, because there's sometimes some buses lead from there, but his bus was delayed, so he thought, okay, I'm going to go explore downtown Ottawa, but before I do, I'm going to pray, because many Muslims, as we know, pray five times a day. So he went to what he said was an empty hallway, and he prayed. And then when he got back to where his coworker was with his stuff, he says a security guard approached him and said, "You can't pray in here. We don't want you praying in here." And that's when people started rolling with their phones. There's video that's gone viral online. But we spoke to him yesterday, and he said he was shocked. He was felt embarrassed. He felt angry. He felt all. He just couldn't believe this was happening to him.
Yeah.
And Via Rail has issued an apology for this, and they've said they were dismayed. They said they're investigating.
I had him on radio.
Yeah, he was on with you. Yeah,
and like he's just he's kind of reeling from it. It's so bizarre. Like, look, people can make mistakes all the time. I have no idea what was going on with the security guard.
No,
but it's clearly, even if there's a prayer room in the Via area, like this guy was not impeding anyone. He was just as someone, it sticks with me. Someone texted in yesterday during the interview. Would they have done the same thing to me if I had the rosary beads out and was praying to Jesus before I took the bus?
Right.
Of course not.
And it seems to be, it could be an education issue. It could be a sort of awareness thing. The guard does say, if you watch the video, you're bothering our other customers, which leads me to, we don't have what happened before. I mean, we have this video, and we have Ahmed, who we spoke to, who didn't want his last name used, giving his account. We don't know what happened. The way the guard said it, it seemed like maybe someone complained. And obviously that's a problem. Because this is, as he pointed out, freedom of religion. He's not bothering anyone.
Yeah.
It's his right to practice his religion how he chooses. And, Via Rail says they're investigating. We'll see what happens. The transport minister, Omar Al-Ghabra, tweeted last night that he's glad they're taking it seriously. He oversees Via Rail as a Crown Corporation. So, yeah, it's a bizarre story. It's obviously one that is getting a lot of attention, but I think, people in Ottawa, we like to pride ourselves on being inclusive and being welcoming, and this, Toronto man who was here had a very different experience.
Yeah. Okay, we will continue to follow that, and a lot of traffic on the website as well. This was a bizarre one. At around 7 o'clock last night, just before we went off the air, Katie Griffin was in for Patricia, and I was able to say on camera, "The Senate stinks." I like that.
There you go.
It's like a dad joke.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like literally. Senate stinks.
Well, I was walking.
Yeah,
I was,
you were downtown.
I was walking back from I was walking basically back to the Rideau Center from sort of downtown, and around the War Memorial, it started, or around Queen and Elgin, I was like, what is that smell? It smelled like rotten eggs, basically.
Yeah.
And it got stronger the farther you walked, and all the way to the Rideau Center. I know people that were at Mackenzie King Bridge who smelled it, people who were at City Hall who could smell it. So it was this widespread sulfury smell. And then I was like, what's up with that? And I saw earlier that the Senate adjourned. Senator Don Plett, who I did not know, had worked as a plumber.
I didn't know that either.
And he's like, I remember this smell from when I was a plumber, but I haven't experienced it as a senator. And apparently some of them were complaining of headaches and some other issues. So,
and lots of comments as the Senate shuts down on one of the news stories.
Yeah.
Wow, the Senate's full of S's. And
yeah, yeah. No, the comments write themselves.
So what was it? Do we know what it was? It was something to do with the locks?
So apparently they opened the locks for the first time in a while, and there was some smelly water that started to run, and that's what created the smell. But,
wow,
man, like, I was getting worried about, man, we got President Biden coming here on Thursday.
Yeah.
He's going to, that's the area where he's going to be doing a lot of stuff. Like,
what
he
if
can't
it
get
smells?
What if it smells? What if he comes for his first Canadian visit as president, and then it smells like rotten eggs? We can't
right.
do that.
Yeah,
that was my concern yesterday.
Yeah, the patriotic concern.
Yeah.
But
like the other thing,
they fixed it though, or it dissipated.
I guess it dissipated. But the other thing is that we have LRT stations that still smell like that. So
I heard it, I'm like, okay.
And
is this related to the Parliament station?
Yeah, it's Parliament and Rideau both sometimes smell like rotten eggs. That's a water problem as well that they haven't resolved. So when it starts to smell like that throughout like all of downtown, you get a little nervous.
All right.
But it's fixed now.
Web Wednesdays.
For now.
A bizarre story at Via Rail, and the Senate stinks. And now it doesn't stink.
And Joe Biden can come here and take a breath in of fresh Ottawa air. If you're looking for Biden road closures, by the way, those are all online too. That's doing really well because people are trying to plan their next couple days.
Right.
And there's a lot of road closures to think about, especially Thursday evening into Friday. So
okay, watch for the beast.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate this.
Thanks, Graham.
That's Mike Woods, our online guru, CTV Ottawa and CFRA. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bull right after the 10 o'clock news. We have a cooking segment, Cooking with Charmaine. Love it. Stay with us. In
this
world,
it's just us. This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the show. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia, who is feeling a little under the weather today. We hope she feels better. Glad to be here. Beautiful, bright, and sunny second day of spring. Love this weather. And we're going to get a bit of freezing rain coming. And once we get through that, some high temperatures tomorrow. It is right around the corner. I can feel the melt coming for all those people who have had it with the snow. And we've got a lot going on the show today. We're getting ready, of course, for the visit of the U.S. president and others. It's always a bit of a production, to say the least. And that is one of our big five stories.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at Work. Big five stories.
Huge news, big five stories. Chris Holsky's here in studio. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm looking outside to see if there are any military choppers flying over us yet, and the answer is no.
The answer is
not quite. Could see them today, though.
Yes. yeah. We're going to see lots of that. And John Krupe's downstairs in the CTV newsroom. Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to start with Doug Ford yesterday. Interesting.
His haircut?
No, we'll get to that later. Brilliant. Well, actually, you know what? We can talk about both. let's start with the okay, you started me off. Let's start with the haircut. This is his socks. This is his Vanity Fair cover. So what am I talking about?
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau's buzz in the early days that his critics couldn't do anything about, that his supporters absolutely loved, that was not a liability, was a boost. Do we have Doug Ford? Yeah. Here is Doug Ford talking about why his hair is cut so short.
Every guy out there understands this. So you go into the barber. And I went down south for a few days, so I go into Walmart. I'm a cheap son of a gun, so I see the, you know, $15 haircut or whatever. I walk in there, and, you know, I said, I just want a trim, just a little trim. And every guy knows what number they are. Number one, the lower you get, the more they take off their hair. So I'm about a number four. It's just, you know, a little bit of a trim. So I sit down in the chair. This guy grabs my hair like this and starts shaking. I'm thinking, you know, the problem was, Colin, he didn't speak English and I didn't speak Spanish. So all of a sudden he pulls out the shaver and zoom right across the thing. He must have used not even a one, a zero.
Like, it on television, it's just like, who can't relate to that, Chris Holsky?
Doug Ford doesn't know Quattro?
Yeah, and you can make fun of it all you want. It's kind of like the cheesecake thing. It's kind of like, but it's
a
better.
Going
than,
down
it's
a
better
stretch.
Than that.
Yeah.
It's better than that. And if you're going to defeat this guy, you have to have a person in the leadership who can pull that off and not fake it. And have people buy it.
Yeah, if I'm going to compliment Doug Ford on anything, it's how he comes off in moments like this, in those interviews, where those bits where he does have to show a bit of personality, because honestly, he does shine.
Yeah. John Croupy, it drives liberals and others nuts because they want to talk about the green belt. They want to talk about stag and doe. They want to talk about unspent healthcare money. And all of that's important and in the news stream. But that's tough to beat.
Yeah. And after he has that... explanation of why his hair is so short, the reporter is saying, and on the green belt, and it kind of deflates the next question almost.
Totally does.
Yeah,
it totally does. And they say around him that, and look, I'm not like, he's got his faults and he knows he's got his faults. He's made mistakes and then he comes back, you know, and I think overall, this fits into the question for conservatives. Like, Pierre Poilievre is not like that.
No.
He is not like that. He is a pugilist. He is a fierce fighter, right? And so I wonder for federal conservatives out there, how relatable can Pierre Poilievre pull that off? Does he need to pull that off in order to win big swaths of the country and take it away from the liberals?
Well, there's a big difference in their positions right now, because I know you're talking about Trudeau and the success that he showed in the
yes.
election campaign going into that. And with a long period, that was with, again, same similar situation that Poilievre is in now, facing a leader who has been in power for some time. Doug Ford, when he's trying to disarm people, he's doing it from a position of authority. He is not trying to take over. He doesn't need to show anger in the way that
yes.
things are running, because he's actually running the show at this time.
The hardest position in Canadian politics is the opposition leader, because people see you in a certain light. And when you're the Premier of Ontario or the Prime Minister of the country, people see you in a different light.
Well, look at the way he handled the Rouleau inquiry.
Yes.
That he abandoned Ontario. Look how he handled that. Yeah, and he just used the example. Toronto, the police chief and the mayor handled it one way. The police chief and the mayor in Ottawa handled another way.
And they're both gone.
Yeah.
And they're both gone. And he made that point.
Yeah.
He made that point.
So,
sorry, Chris, I cut you off.
No, that's okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's all right.
You got it?
I got it out, yes.
So the reason that I compare him to Trudeau, which a lot of people would be just like, give me a break. You got to remember this. Think about this. How did Trudeau win? Early days, time for change. Happy days are here again, you know, sunny ways.
Snitch line by the Tories.
Right. He was able to, but he was able to transcend. And the other thing he did that people forget, he brought in millions of new voters who were excited about him. Did Doug Ford do that? In parts of Toronto, the answer is yes. He is being painted as this ideologue, conservative, you know, right-wing crazy guy. And you go into the apartment buildings in Scarborough and they know his name, just like his brother. So strategically trying to go up against that, like, he's just had a really bad run, right? Stag and Doe, the
Greenbelt.
I'd
argue things connected with the inquiry, including some of the ways that he answered questions yesterday, have gone very poorly for
the inquiry. And you know what? One of his numbers is above 41%.
Yep.
Like, and some say it's even higher than that. So I just think, you know, a lesson for opposition parties, and we can move on, but a lesson for opposition parties, if you've got a personality-driven leader you're up against, you've got to find a personality-driven leader yourself that connects with voters in a way that can challenge that. And I wish Yasser Naqvi luck if he's in, but boy, the Liberal Party of Ontario has a steep hill to climb. Can they do
it?
Yeah,
but sometimes,
John Croupy?
Sometimes time for a change Trump's personality, right?
Yes, it does.
So
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think Trudeau is finding out, or will find out maybe, that you can't really push that rock up the hill anymore if you're facing time for change and fatigue with you as a personality. So personality-driven parties do so at their own peril. Okay. One of the stories we're looking at, Uber says Ottawa has the worst passengers in Canada. What is this about, John Croupy? Is this just... we rate badly as passengers? Is this real?
Okay, so I see this headline. I see the story. I read the story. And is this another one of those list stories where you can put any city as the worst, and in this case, it's Ottawa. I give it short shrift.
I do too.
Yeah,
I shouldn't. We shouldn't be talking about it if I follow my own advice.
Yeah,
like these ranking stories to get names of companies in the news, and of course we lap it up just because it's a talkable story, and here we are on talk radio.
It's a service that everybody uses right now. Just like we'll try to remember that the next time Tim Hortons ends up bringing some kind of remark.
Yeah,
or brings up a new product, and we talk about it anyway. Uber. There is something that kind of bothers me about this list, because they provided they've got 1 through 5, they've got their cities up there, and they really don't provide any information on metrics whatsoever. So they say that Ottawa has the lowest user rating. There's really no information provided as to why we rank last. There are some issues they point up saying, hey, if you want to improve your rating, then clean up your mess, make sure you're at your ride on time, but they don't specifically say what exactly Ottawa is doing that's got the more negative fervor.
Was the survey done during the convoy?
Yeah, it could be. It could have skewed the numbers. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, getting ready for Joe Biden and others to come. It's a big event, and we'll talk about what these things achieve. Of course, the first trip for U.S. presidents used to be right to Canada, and we kind of moved away from that. Does that matter? It matters more to us than it does to them, I think. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Patricia Bull on Ottawa at Work. Stay with us. Population growth in Canada in 1 year has gone up more than 1 million people for the first time ever. Canada's population now estimated at basically 40 million people. 1,050,000 people from January 1 to January 23. It's 2.7% growth. That is close to the largest growth, which was 1957, 3.3%. Yes, 96% of it, Chris Holsky, coming from international migration, immigration, which includes refugees, migrants, and immigrants. Extraordinary numbers.
Yes, and that's going to keep climbing. That's what the prediction has been. Over the course of the next several decades, we're going to see a level of population surge in Canada, and where are they going to go? A lot of them are going to end up in cities quite like ours. And this is something that has been weighing on my mind the last few weeks in Ottawa. When I see these figures, know that we're going to need an increased level of housing in our community. What we've seen over the course of the past few weeks, what we saw in the latest update on Monday, you take a development like what's been going on in Orleans, where we had some neighborhood resistance to that one big block that's going to have not enough parking, I think, for every single tenant that goes there. A lot of people were bringing up the argument and the suggestion saying, well, wouldn't this be more suited to be closer to an LRT station? And I'd say, you know, you're right. However, that doesn't eliminate the need for affordable housing in that neighborhood. There needs to be more housing everywhere in places like Ottawa. There needs to be a lot of a transformational thought. And when you see a population bump like this and projections showing that it could accelerate even further over the next 10 years, the next 20 years, there has to be a lot more thought when it comes to urban planning about these kind of accommodations.
A few years ago, that city council may have shut that down because of the opposition, and they went the opposite way today. Housing seems to be trumping all. John Krupe, what's your take on this?
I'm going to be a little bit more patriotic, and Graham, you said 40 million? I never thought we'd get to 40 million.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's negative. I think it has wide societal implications that I'm not so sure we've fully thought through. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to be just patriotic, and I know there's going to be housing issues, and obviously most of the refugees or new Canadians, you know, it's Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, right? That's always the pressure points, and Ottawa to some degree. But I'm going to say, guess what? Canada, it's the greatest country in the world, and that's why our population's increasing so dramatically.
Here.
I'm stunned. I would have assumed that, I don't know, we were nowhere near a 1950s growth. This is what Statistics Canada says. The previous record population growth in 1957 was related to the high number of births during the post-war baby boom and the high immigration of refugees following the Hungarian Revolution of 1956. That was 3.3%. That's only 0.6% off what we hit in 2022 up to January 1, 2023. That's before the federal government announced an increase in immigration that will exceed 500,000 quite quickly in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's amazing. And we're seeing this level of policy, but this, again, this is something that has been predicted. I'm not sure that many people expected it to happen this quickly within the certain time frame, even though you do have to factor in some additional circumstances, again, going on right now. How many people are living in Canada because of what's happening in Ukraine, for example?
Ukraine war, Syrian conflict, all of those things play a role. But if we're up, they're up, the population's up 0.7% in one quarter, with a total growth of 2.7%.
Bring it on.
No, if you think about, okay, so if we increase even more, John Krupe, to your point and your patriotism, which I appreciate, think about what happened post-baby boom. Community colleges were created.
Yeah.
Medicare was expanded and actually created. The 1960s boom in basically the society that we now have happened because of the baby boom. There are legitimate questions out of this now. Are we going to see a new baby boom fueled 97% by people from other parts of the world, which partially the 1950s boom was fueled by? And what does that mean going forward for our cities, for our transit, for our schools, for our suburbs, for our healthcare? Extraordinary. Like, look, hey, if you're concerned about this, you don't want it going the other way. You don't want a shrinking population because that's a disaster all around. What about those larger questions, though, John? Do you think that city governments, provincial governments, are fully prepared for this kind of growth?
Well, you know, we've had these warnings. We've had these smart city summits. We've had these warnings as, you know, how to grow your city smarter. But the problem is we've had the pandemic, and the pandemic is, our downtowns are not the same. So there's all kinds of new equations and metrics, if you want to use that word, regarding this population growth. And I don't know if our governments are prepared for it. And they better be.
Right. Yeah. A reminder that whether it's this generation or last generations, whether it's the Italians, the Irish, Asian immigration, the Rideau Canal, and what happened in our history there, immigrants come here. And most of them, work incredibly hard and take multiple jobs and start businesses. And there are pressures when you have this kind of population growth, but much of it is positive. John Krupe, I appreciate this. Thank you.
See you later.
All right. That's John Krupe downstairs in CTV Newsroom. Chris Holsky off to the CTV Newsroom. I swear.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia. You know, it's got the scent of spring in the air, and then you have a look at the front lawn or the curbside, and boy, there's still a lot of snow out there. You wonder when the melt is going to start. I mean, it's already started, right? We've got the sun shining right now. We're heading above zero. We've got some rain coming. Those things combine for the spring wash away. But with this amount of snow, it will take a significant amount of time for Old Man Winter to loosen its grip. Someone who is in the business of predicting and watching and telling us all about that is David Phillips, senior climatologist, Environment Canada. He joins us on the line. Hi, David.
Hey, Graham. Nice to be with you.
Great you could join us. This snowpack's significant. I spend a fair bit of time cross-country skiing, and I was skiing the other day, and I looked down, and I was on top of, you know, a packed down groomed over a bridge, and boy, it was like half a meter of snow. There's still a lot in the forest in this part of the country.
Well, that's right. And it's not just what you see in your backyard in Ottawa, but you go back up to the, you know, the upper reaches of the Ottawa River Basin, and there's a lot more snow. I think it's maybe twice as much as what you see in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And now, the good news is that a lot of that snow, you've lost it. For example, in Ottawa, earlier this month, there was 60 centimeters of snow sitting on the ground, and now you have, I think, about 30, 28, something like that. But, of course, there's more up in the northern reaches of the Ottawa Basin. And so that's always some concern because of the fact that, first of all, we don't finish with the snow. In Ottawa, typically after the first day of spring, you get about 25 centimeters on average, about 12% of your annual total. So, I mean, you can have the garden rake out in your garage, but you got to have the snow shovel handy too. So it's this back and forth and up and down. So, but really, I think, Graham, when we look back at the 2017-2019,
yes,
there was a good amount of snow sitting on the ground. I think a little in one of those years there was more than you have now at this time of March, but also there was also less. And what really determines it is, okay, how do we get rid of that that snow, and how much is going to come? I remember in one of those years, I can't remember which, 2019-2020, doesn't really matter, but there was about 50-55 centimeters of snow that still fell during the last week of March and into April.
It was a late storm, and then we had, if I remember correctly, I think in 19 we had significant rain both of those years,
exactly.
And a quick warm up. So if we get a gradual warm, that's good, and if we maybe avoid some of the rain, that's good.
Exactly, and you're so right about that. It was like a monsoon that came in one of those years. What they didn't get, say, as a normal amount of snow that year, but boy, they had like twice the amount of spring rains that you normally get. And also, it's the timing of that. You don't want to go from slush to sweat. You want to kind of ease into that. And the forecast right now, I wouldn't say that I'm raising a red flag, because we really don't know, Graham, what the April showers are going to bring. I mean, our model are good for temperatures, but really the storms aren't even born yet that are going to affect the precipitation regime in the Ottawa area this spring. We claim it's going to be near normal. I think it's a bit of a cop-out because, hey, you just don't know whether it's going to be above normal or below. So that's always kind of the wild card. But I think the getting rid of the snow and any snow that comes through kind of gradual temperatures, this kind of maple syrup kind of weather where you're melting during the day and freezing at night is really what you want, and it's great for the flood forecasters. They can handle it, control it, and what have you. But you're right, you don't know what's in we know there's a much more snow existing in the woodlots and the forests of the upper reaches of the Ottawa River. And you know, in Ottawa there's really two kind of what we call freshets. This is where the river reaches its peak, and there's first of all one in the Ottawa area that from just the snow and the melting the ground and everything like this in the Ottawa area. But then there comes a second one later on, maybe 10 days or 12 days later, from what we see in the upper reaches. So, you know, the other thing too is you don't want those things to occur at the same time.
Right.
And
we don't.
Then it becomes overload.
And we don't know that a listener is reminding me, of course, a winter that I will never forget, 07-08. Anne in Winchester texts in, on April 23rd, 2008, we had a ton of snowfall in Winchester and Ottawa. I remember that year.
Yes.
That was the year that my sons were on top of our snowbanks, and they were even with the eaves troughs of my home.
Oh, in April?
Yes. Oh. It was a record. It was an incredible year. And so, yeah, we've got to remember, any suggestion yet? Or is it too early to say we're done with snow? You wouldn't say that now, David.
No, I mean, when we look at the forecast, you know, we're seeing there is a risk of a freezing rainstorm tonight into tomorrow, and that's a concern. Not a lot of precipitation with that, but hey, anything that's slippery and slick on the surfaces is treacherous and not good. And then we see, temperatures can get up to where they're, you know, kind of near normal or even slightly above, and then they fall back next week or in the weekend. We see periods of snow and then rain showers or flurries, and then middle of next week we see nothing. Really, Graham, we're into this period of kind of, it's a very fickle and fitful kind of weather. It's not a warm-up, and yet it's a warm-up, a teaser, and then it cools down. And we're also in this period where the jet stream, which is really the conveyor belt for storms that track through our area, and it is moving from its winter location to its summer location. And so therefore, it's over us. And so that's why we see a lot more active and volatile and chaotic kind of weather, where you go one day or 2 days with, pretty nice sun, you think it's here, the spring, and then all of a sudden you're back into some inclement kind of nuisance kind of snow, or and then you're back into it. It's a teaser. It's this back and forth and up and down, this kind of tug-of-war that exists between nature, and that's really what spring is. It's the flood season, the mud season, and it's not yet about the real warmth. And that our models seem to suggest that, yes, the trend is going to warm up, in the late March and into early first part of April, we're going to deal with this back and forth, this grudge match that exists between the warm season and the cold season. So it's
spring
what
is the grudge match. I like that. We'll see who wins.
That's right. Hey, I'm going to put my money on winter still yet.
Just for now. All right, David, appreciate this as always.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
That is David Phillips with Environment Canada talking about the tug of war that is spring. And we're not done yet, but boy, that sun is shining right now. It feels great through this studio window. So if you can get outside before we've got some inclement weather on the way, and we'll have the latest on that coming up in just a moment. And after the break, we will speak with the National Council of Canadian Muslims about this incident at the VIA rail station yesterday that 2 days ago that VIA has had to apologize for. Muslim man told he cannot pray in the station off to the side. He had to take his prayers outside. Stay with us. I'm Graham Richardson. This is Ottawa at Work.
Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson. Yesterday, we learned about a situation at the Ottawa train station, the VIA train station, where a Muslim man was told he can't pray here. He's told to take his prayers outside. This is what Ahmed said about it.
I put my prayer mat down. I do my prayer, literally, like, it wasn't even 5 minutes. It was at least, like, 3 to 4 minutes, somewhere in that time frame. I go do my prayer. I come back to where my bags and stuff were, which was on the opposite side. And I just see him come to me saying, don't pray here. And I'm like, what? He's like, don't pray here. You're bothering our customers. And I'm just in shock at this point.
That was Ahmed explaining what happened to him at the Ottawa train station. VIA has since apologized. Fatima Abdallah is with the National Council of Canadian Muslims. Fatima joins us now. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
What did you think about this story when you heard about it?
I think it's fairly disturbing that an individual was asked by a person in a position of somewhat authority, as he was wearing a security guard vest in the VIA rail station, to not pray in a public space. We believe that everyone should feel space, should feel comfortable in public spaces, and should feel comfortable in practicing their religion. It's disturbing, not just for the man in the video, but for the entire Muslim community.
I would assume that this is fairly rare, that this is not a normal way to react to someone who is praying. Yeah, do you see this regularly?
We see a number of different forms of hate and Islamophobia across the country, whether it be an individual being asked not to pray in a public space, or similarly in the TTC where an individual was attacked by a customer who had asked questions about her faith and her religion and said, do you know what we do to people like you, and was holding up a knife. So it's incidents like this that are concerning, but what's more concerning about this specific incident is that it comes from a person who's was employed and in a position of power and authority in the Via Rail station. This just goes to the call for more action and for more information on how Via Rail treats these forms of hate and discrimination within their facilities.
What if someone complained, and I'm not taking the security guard's side, what would be an appropriate response if someone complained about Ahmed praying?
I think an appropriate response would have been to ask him where he was and what he was doing, if he had taken all of the details aside and concerns aside, then he would have noticed that the individual that was praying was in a slight corner and was not disturbing any of the customers. So that's very key to note, is that there were folks there, but where he had gone to pray was in a slight corner where he was not disturbing anyone. So it just goes to show the need for more and the need for more communication. And the way that he handled it was not right. We all saw the video, and we all saw how he felt superior and like the authoritative figure in that video, and was clearly telling him that he can't pray in this public space. That's infringing his freedom of practicing his faith.
His whole demeanor suggested that Ahmed had done something wrong. And I mean, you can have all sorts of debates about, you know, well, there's a prayer room, should it be there? I mean, this was not in a high traffic area. He took the time to go aside. It didn't take long. If he did have a complaint, Ahmed couldn't see the person who complained, and there certainly wasn't a groundswell of complaint.
Exactly. It was a minor moment of him just quietly practicing his faith, finishing up his prayers, which. I would have believed wouldn't have taken that long, and he went and went back to seating area and continued on with his day, and that's when he was approached by a security guard who was telling him that he can't practice his faith in a public space. So that's disturbing, and it goes to show that there's much more that we need to do here. We understand that the Via Rail has issued an apology to the Muslim community, but there's so much more that needs to happen, more than an investigation. We need to see these security guards and Via Rail employees go through anti-Islamophobia trainings or diversity trainings and other sorts of things that can prevent from an incident like this happening ever again. It's not okay that individuals no longer feel safe in public spaces to go about their everyday lives.
Fatima Abdullah from the National Council on Canadian Muslims, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. I'd ask the questions about immigration if you're just joining us. Statistics Canada reporting explosive growth, record growth in immigration last year in Canada, over 1 million people added for the first time. 2.7% growth. The record was 3.3% back in the baby boom, 1957, and the Hungarian Revolution, where a lot of immigrants from Hungary came. So we are in that range. And we are nearly 40 million people now. Lots of questions about whether the country can take it and whether we're set up to accept that many people. A legitimate question. And we're hearing that on our text board. Our healthcare system can't afford to increase our population any more than it already is. Not by one more person. We have so many people who do not have healthcare providers. This is ridiculous. Be as patriotic as you like, but all we hear about now in the news is that there aren't enough homes and there aren't enough doctors. Sounds to me like another 1 million people a year that can't get a doctor. Hi, Graham. I don't agree that the numbers they're bringing to Canada, I don't agree with that number. Not until we have adequate housing for all people across the country, not just the affluent. BNN Bloomberg's covering the story, and they said, this is great news if you're a business looking for new customers, whether that's a, you know, any kind of business. It's not great news if you're looking for an apartment in big cities in Canada. And the housing piece is tremendously important. When we have the kinds of rents that we're seeing over the last few years, it is extraordinary how young people, how new immigrants are going to manage, because it is a huge problem. I fully support immigration, but I can't even buy a house. It's how can we be expected to compete with this many people coming into the country? We can't take care of our own people as is right now. We should put a temporary pause on this and build a million homes and then resume. That's another difficult piece, right? To build a million homes, you need a lot of new immigrants to fill the trades, because Canada's population currently, if we stop immigration, is not going to meet it. We're going to take a quick break for news. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Patricia Bull, just coming up on 11 o'clock. Stay with us. It was the summer of love.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Patricia. We are getting ready for the 2023 provincial budget. Next week, of course, is the federal budget. The Ford government out basically daily now making announcements, a lot of focus on the trades, a lot of focus on boosting the trades and getting people into the trades to meet the shortages out there. That's just one piece. Claudia DeSanti is the senior policy manager for the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. Claudia joins us on the line. Thanks for being here, Claudia.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What does business need from the province now? Like, if there were two or three things that that you would ask or you would hope would be reflected, what are they from business these days?
So businesses are grappling with major headwinds this year: inflation, labor shortages, supply chain disruptions. Your listeners will know there's a slowdown of the economy. What they're looking for in this budget are measures that will strengthen the productive capacity of the economy to get businesses working, to get workers working. So a couple of those bigger pieces include the labor shortages, right? So measures that will address workforce development, training and reskilling of the workforce to help fill some of those gaps. That's one big piece. Another is the healthcare system. What we saw in our survey this year of businesses is that the healthcare system vulnerabilities are affecting business confidence. So they want to see modernization of the healthcare system that will address some of those vulnerabilities, the backlogs, the staffing shortages within that system, because we know that a healthy population is necessary for a healthy economy. Another piece, I'll give you a third, is critical infrastructure. Mm. So a lot has been invested towards broadband, but we're not seeing some of that funding being rolled out. There are some regulatory and technical barriers that are preventing some of that funding from moving forward. So we need to see measures that will get that infrastructure built, because particularly broadband, but also housing infrastructure and transportation, those are things that we're hearing from businesses that are holding them back.
On the healthcare piece, I mean, for businesses, especially competing internationally, in the past, the healthcare system has been a real, a really attractive piece in Canada. Has that been shaken somewhat?
The pandemic has certainly brought the healthcare system in sharper focus as a business challenge, and I think a challenge for Ontarians generally. We've seen a massive increase in the backlogs, the surgeries in particular, a lot of burnout among healthcare workers, and so there's been more shortages in that regard. So it has changed a little bit. I would say, you know, we need to stop comparing ourselves to the United States. We do have a more universally funded system, and it has a lot of advantages when we compare ourselves to our neighbors to the south. But the system, it's not working well. And I think when we compare it to what we see in a lot of European companies, the countries in the UK and Sweden, other Nordic countries, there's a mix of public and private solutions that has worked very well that retains the publicly funded model that we like to, you know, pride ourselves on, and we should, but also allows for more efficiencies. And so we need to get serious about making some of those improvements, because the waiting times that we're seeing are not sustainable.
And that echoes what the government seems to be saying, that the status quo doesn't work, and that throwing more money at it, they say, doesn't work. And now is the time to align ourselves more clearly with other countries that have a private-public mix.
That's right. And to be clear, we're not talking about privatizing the healthcare system. We're talking about the delivery of services. And something that I think not all of the public fully understands is that we have private delivery already within the system, right? Family doctors are small businesses, and the system itself is funded through OHIP, through the government. So we're looking at more of those private delivery options, but not a privatization of the funding of the system. And that's an important distinction. But we still use fax systems, right? Fax machines in the healthcare system. So a lot of that modernization is long overdue.
And that is, what else do you want to see in the budget, do you think?
With regard to healthcare, or
no,
broadly?
Just generally for business and for the chamber.
Right. Generally, so workforce development, I'll come back to that because it's a big one. And 87% of big businesses are facing labor shortages right now. Across the province, over 60% of all businesses, specifically in sectors like tourism and food and accommodations and healthcare. And immigration is part of the solution here. We saw the federal government work with Ontario to increase the allocation of economic immigrants. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that, we need to make sure that communities are prepared to welcome those newcomers. And to do that, we need immigration services. We need housing affordability. So some of the settlement services that are available to make sure that those workers can come live are going to be equally important to just increasing the number of people. And then also training, right? We have a lot of untapped labor in the Indigenous population and women, so more training opportunities for those equity-deserving groups.
Claudia DeSanti, Senior Policy Manager at the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Claudia mentioned immigration and the need to get communities prepared, as we have been talking about all show. The new numbers from Statistics Canada showing that Canada broke records in immigration last year, over a million people for the first time, 2.7% growth. We're asking people our question of the day, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Graham, immigration needs to be better planned. There's no infrastructure to support it. Demand for housing is extraordinary, therefore higher prices to rent or buy. There are no processes in place to fast-track certification and accreditation of trades. Experienced car or truck technicians can't get a job as they don't have their trade certificate. Same with plumbers, electricians, other trades. Rocks and road situation should be discussed at the meeting with U.S. President, and better control should be put in place. Individuals entered into the U.S. on a visitor visa should continue to be a U.S. responsibility. That's Dan. Graham, about immigration, it's sad to hear the level of ignorance in our society. Anyone questioning immigration just has to look at our failing demography. That's Ben in Ottawa. Yeah, Ben, I'm not willing to brand all the critics as, I know you're not either, but as ignorant. But, you know, I know there are people who have concerns about this level of immigration. We are far higher than anybody else in the OECD. We are more aggressive on immigration than the Americans, percentage-wise, per capita-wise, the Australians, the British. We are number one. And the government of the day is telling us this is a great thing. And I understand that point of view. I think what we're seeing in the text board and the anxiety out there about this is coming from people who can't get their own family doctor. And they're thinking to themselves, how are we going to absorb this many people and maintain our standard of living? And before anybody writes anything nasty back to me, I understand the shrinking population of Canadian-born Canadians. I mean, we're with the exception of First Nations, we're all immigrants here, right? So I'm not suggesting that, you know, you turn the tap off, but we have not, as a country, really had much of a discussion about what's appropriate and what's not. I mean, the federal government comes out with a big splash and a big number saying, we are going to add more. We are going to go higher than we've ever gone before. And the main driver of that is shortage of labor and population growth is good. But I don't think we've had a full discussion about all the implications that we're seeing on the text board. You know, are the schools ready? Are the hospitals ready? Are the neighborhoods ready? Do we have enough apartments where people, and the answer I think is no to all of those. So, you know, you take a look and people are raising Wroxham Road. We've got hundreds of people in Cornwall who are basically are migrants. They've come, there's a problem with migration around the world. They've come, walked into Canada through Wroxham Road. The Quebec government has pleaded with Ottawa to close Wroxham Road. The problem with doing that, of course, then another Wroxham Road opens up right away. But the question is, you know, you can't boost a hospital and a school quickly enough to adjust and to reflect the numbers of people that are coming to the country if we do 2.7% again or more. That's another million people that we've added last year. If we do another million plus again, it's we should have been planning that for that for years. And it feels like we are not. I don't know if we are. I just, based on what I'm hearing from municipalities and what we're seeing out there, when you have, you know, new schools built after the fact, after new suburbs have gone in, the next year they have 17 portables outside. That says to me that the school system as a whole is not ready for an influx, because the current influx in certain parts of cities, they can't handle. And this is a city issue. New Canadians are coming to cities disproportionately and those cities are Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and Ottawa. Yes, but we're probably fourth or fifth on that list. Anyway, fascinating discussion, you know, and I'll preface all of the discussion with this. It's better than going the other way. It's better than having a population shrink. Nobody wants that. That's higher costs, less service, and, you know, a flight of talent out of the country. Nobody wants that. But I think today is a good day where, you know, you raise the question whether Canada can handle this. Federal government says we can. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bull. We're back on Ottawa at Work in just a moment.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bull, joined now by our crack producer, Corey Price. Corey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right, you know, getting through here, heading towards the end of the show, this show anyway. I got a question for you, young person. You know these things. So, old man dad question.
Okay. Like,
I'm on Instagram, and basically on the Meta products like Instagram and Facebook. Mm. I'll spend like 10 seconds on one thing, and then it fills in my feed, right? The algorithm. Like,
yeah.
So for the last 3.5 months, it's okay. I love it. I've got lots of skiing videos because I must have stopped on skiing videos beforehand. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to get rid of it? Like, how do you do that?
On Instagram, I have no idea.
I think it just moves as you move.
Like, yeah.
So as it moves into cycling season, I'll get bike videos.
You start prioritizing stuff. I do also, I believe most social media has the option. You'll have the settings when you tap the three little dots on a post. There may be a I'm not interested option. Like on my phone, there's like a news thing on the side. If I don't want to see a story, I can tap the little dots and hit I'm not interested. So that may be an option.
So there's
too.
More controls than I'm exercising. They're probably.
Probably. I will say I use Instagram in a fairly limited way.
Yeah.
Probably on average for people my age anyway. So I don't get a lot of the
extra stuff.
Right.
Or at least I'm not noticing as much of it, but surely there's got to be something.
I'm sure there would be.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I hit the little dots in a post, and there is hide. So if
hide.
You, yeah.
Oh, okay. So when I see something that I don't like that's there repetitively, I just hit it up and hide.
And it
okay.
should let you hide yeah, it.
I'm sure there.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of effort.
Yeah. Well, and they
like, I just started watching Seinfeld again, and now all of a sudden I've got Seinfeld videos popping up.
Yeah.
I don't think I clicked anything Seinfeld. I think my phone's been listening to me.
Yeah, and they also, they intentionally don't make it clear, like, how
right.
to use those settings, because they don't want you to.
They don't
so.
Want you to control it, because they want to sell you more stuff.
Yeah. I was looking at Shohei Ohtani baseball jerseys, so I'm sure I'm about to get a bunch of ads.
Now, who's he?
He is he's a player for the Angels.
Okay.
But the World Baseball Classic was just on.
Yes.
And Japan won.
Yes.
He was one of their pitchers, and
they beat the Americans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the last at bat was incredible. It was Ohtani pitching, and then Mike Trout was batting, and they're teammates in the MLB. So it was their first time playing each other professionally.
Wow.
And it was this whole
thing.
And
Japan won.
They did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Exciting.
On a wicked slider. Not to get into sports. I know that's what we do when Trish is here. And I'll try to spare us, but.
A wicked slider pitch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
broke
dropped.
Like crazy. Yeah.
Really?
It was gone.
You're a big baseball fan. You got a Blue Jays jersey.
I do. Yeah. I wore the closest I could get. Yeah. I got it. I love baseball because my dad loves baseball.
Nice.
That's what I got to know. I played it a lot when I was a kid. And then it's the one I think that's the sport I've kept up with the most, like from when I was a kid to now. So.
Are you like a box score baseball guy?
Not really.
Right.
And especially as it's becoming more like analytics driven.
Yes.
And a lot of the data, I struggle with some of that.
Right.
And how to get it. But it's just there's something so unique about like the pace of
yes.
it and the approach of it. And that every time you get up there, it's just you're going to watch two guys have a duel, basically. I've always found that really interesting because everything else being so team heavy, there's so many other elements.
There's a lot of individual elements in baseball.
Yeah.
What do you make of these changes now that I've found you, like the clock, now that I've figured out you're a baseball fan?
So
previously, as we all know, it would take a long time to play a whole game, and they've just introduced a clock where the pitcher must pitch by this amount of time or it's a ball.
Yeah.
And the hitter must step in the box by this amount of time or it's a strike, right?
Yeah. And it's different amount. I don't actually have them off the top of my head, but it's different amount of time if there's runners on base or not.
Okay. Okay.
And I think this is the right thing to do. They've been doing it in the minors. It's been working. It's been effective. I think the biggest thing, especially if you're trying to get more people to watch, which is ultimately what MLB wants to do. They want more people watching. One of the biggest hurdles that I have when I'm talking to people about baseball or anything else is they just go, it's slow, it's boring. You're going to watch the pitcher do his routine for every pitch, and it's 35 seconds long, and he's fiddling with his glove, and he's fiddling with the ball, and he's doing poses, and the batter steps up and backs off and steps up, and people feel like that's redundant, and then it's frustrating to watch. I don't know if I notice it as much because, you know, some of the eccentricities are kind of part of it.
Sure.
But I think if the bottom line is assuring people that we're going to get to the part where the ball's in play, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think encouraging just... It's not like, you know, they're getting 5 seconds. It's not needlessly brisk.
Right.
But it's just keeping from the really elongated, drawn-out process.
It just gives it a bit of pace. And the other thing, too, is if you want people to get into it, you have to tell – you can't say to people, in order to get a conclusion here, you got to give us 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I personally, like – when I drop in on the NFL, which isn't very often, I do enjoy the spectacle of the game and the back and forth, and it's massive. I get it. I just don't have I don't want to dedicate an entire Sunday afternoon to watching football. It's too long.
Yeah,
and it acts as a barrier for me to get into the game.
Yeah,
like if that game was 2 hours. And, you know, like, I probably would be more likely to drop in.
Yeah.
I think that's what baseball is trying to address.
It is, yeah. And, like, I've seen baseball games where it's gone into the 16th inning.
Right.
And you're there, and it's been 5 hours, and you're just like, wow, okay. Like, you're really dedicated at this point. One thing that I like, in the last few years, along with a lot of other people, I've gotten to Formula One. I watched NASCAR when I watched NASCAR when I was a kid, but I watch F1 now.
Did you get sucked in by the Netflix thing?
I actually got sucked in by our colleague Callum Fraser and then the F1 show after.
Oh.
So it was
so
him.
Callum's a big F1.
Yeah. The show was out. It was nowhere near as big as it was.
Yeah.
And then he got me into it, and then I caught up on all the lore with the show and then watched it that way. But what's nice is the race is 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's also Sunday morning. Most times you can get up, you can watch it rest of your day right there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I think that is what baseball is trying to do, because I totally get being like, hey, you got 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, you might not. Maybe they don't necessarily want people just dipping in to watch half an inning or an inning and then getting out.
Boy, talk about brilliant marketing. Let's amplify these massive personalities and these $100 million budgets and these bosses behind the scenes who are characters, of course.
Yeah.
Let's amplify them all, package it in a story, and build a season around giving Netflix incredible access. But of course, F1 would have a say in what is in and what is out.
100%.
Just a brilliant strategy.
Yeah. I don't think it's been more clear that they have a say of what's in and what's out than this last season did in terms of fiddling.
Well, that was the Max Verstappen. Is that what you're referring to
with
Lewis Hamilton?
Well, and the fallout from that.
The fallout
into this season.
Somebody got fired, but it wasn't in the Netflix season.
Yeah,
right?
There was a lot of, and then into the last year. I know we got to get out, but the last season that they're covering now, there was a series of pretty controversial things that the show does not address at all. There was a point where there was a tractor on circuit when it was raining to retrieve another car. A driver didn't know about it, went by it at very high speed, extremely dangerous.
Not in the show.
The show does not talk about it at all.
Well, it didn't happen.
Stuff like that. Yeah. If they can present it in a way where all the bad stuff's out and all the good stuff's there.
So it's dressed up like a documentary, but it's really marketing.
That's how I feel, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's clear that they're, someone is making some editorial decisions on
that's based
what
on the business.
In.
Yeah. All right. That's Corey Price. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bull. We're heading towards 11:30 here. Let's head to the CTV newsroom and your news headlines.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bold. Coming up on 11:38, Matt Scooby is here. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Rich. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
We didn't get a chance to talk, but I see you were at Aladdin last night. How was that?
I was. It was good.
Yeah?
It was. It's fun. It's a fun show for the kids.
Yeah.
Right? And
I love the story. I love the movie.
The story and the movie is fantastic.
Those Disney movies, when they, starting with The Little Mermaid and then
Lion King.
Yeah,
that's
and,
like that was
Beauty
right.
and the Beast. It was a real explosion in those stories. And now they've brought them to stage.
Yeah, and it's been around on stage. I saw it on Aladdin on Broadway a number of years ago, and it was excellent. It's a different thing when you can have the same theater and everything else. But they have some pretty special effects in this one. I don't want to ruin anything.
No,
but if you think about a couple of the things from the movie itself, then I'm sure you can maybe put a couple of things together about what they do.
How was the genie? Cool.
Genie stole the show.
Really?
Genie, absolutely. The guy who played the genie last night, and I forget his name, but I was looking at his bio, but he absolutely steals the show, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And was just fantastic.
Tough act to follow with the voice of Robin Williams, right?
It is.
In the movie.
But I think that the way that they've constructed the character for the stage is really, really well done.
Mm.
And so there's a few things like no Apu, like no monkey. He doesn't have a monkey. There's a few brothers that take the place of him.
Oh, okay.
But Jafar is there, clearly Princess Jasmine and otherwise. They kind of changed a whole new world a little bit, so be prepared for it. It's the same song,
yes,
but they've updated it a little bit for the stage.
And Full House last night for the preview?
Full House last night, which is always fun when you have a full crowd.
I love the Broadway across Canada because these are not the same actors who are right on Broadway right now, but at the same time, it's the level of performance is excellent. It's off the charts.
Oh, you're not going to get this is as high level as we get here in Ottawa, no matter what. Yeah, because you scan through some of the bios and some of them have just come off. I think the guy who was playing Aladdin was just on Broadway, was just in Jagged Little Pill, I think, in Alanis Morissette's.
Which is another one that's coming in May.
Which is another tour that's coming, exactly, which is exciting. So, but Broadway Across Canada does an excellent job of bringing these shows and still some of the things that they do manage to do is really, really good. Like, there's a few extra songs. So I'm not sure. Overall, I think just me personally, as a pretty harsh theater critic, I think myself, right. I'm not sure it makes the best adaptation for the stage.
Okay.
That's just me personally.
Like the story.
Like just the story, right. And the way it's told and how you watch it on film. And maybe that's just me being a Disney purist for the fact of, like, watching those movies when I was a kid. Not in the same way that Lion King really translated to the stage, and the way that the animals are and the way that they did it. And I'm not saying, like, the costume design in this show is off the charts,
mm-hmm.
and the way that everything sparkles and everything, like, comes off, like, it's really, really well done. And the singing was phenomenal last night too. And minus a couple of tech issues, but don't get me started on that. There's a little, like, it's our TV brains, right? Like, for the listeners who don't get this sometimes, if you're in TV or movies or production, and there's, like, a little
thing,
there was a mic issue, I'm pretty sure, with Aladdin, and a connector that I could hear some popping at the end of the first act. I was like, somebody fix it.
Yeah.
But
they'll work
that,
it out.
Exactly. They did for the second half, but it was excellent. And I highly encourage, especially if you have young kids.
Yeah.
I know that, like, the ones are late, but if you have a chance to get there on the weekend, or even the kids that, you know, 10, 12 that can stay up a little bit later, highly, highly recommend. They will be highly entertained.
Great. We got CTV News at noon coming up. What are your top stories? What are you looking at?
I'm sure you've touched on it. Joe Biden's visit coming clearly. So arrives tomorrow evening. There are some road closures, some that will be in place as of 4 o'clock tomorrow, right through until Friday night at 11 o'clock. So we'll have the updated
It's
a short visit. It's not going to be too long. It's not going to be a super big impact. But if you're in and around the downtown core, you're going to be, you need to know and be aware of some of the roads that are going to be closed. So we'll have a full update on that. We'll hear from the mayor as well. We've spoken, Leah LaRocque was at City Hall, spoke to Mark Sutcliffe about Joe Biden's visit too. And so we'll have the latest on that. And also, I know, I'm sure you mentioned it. Did you talk to Mike Woods about it as well? The population growth?
Oh yeah.
So Jackie Paris.
Talking all morning about
exactly.
It.
So Jackie Paris, wild, just wild numbers when we talk about immigration and like Canada at 40 million people now. So,
And this of course is before the federal government's boost of immigration has really kicked in. So it's going to be more than a million next year.
Right.
So we've had lots of people reacting to that. And I said on the radio, and I'll say it again. I mean, you can be opposed to this and raise questions about this without being anti-immigrant and being branded all sorts of things. But it does bring out, it tends to bring out xenophobic views, views that are, can be repugnant. And we actually, to be honest, we've only had a couple of those on the text board, which is
good.
Nice to see.
Good.
I don't know that, I was saying this earlier, I don't know that we've had a full discussion about the implications of this.
We haven't.
And we are much higher than any of the OECD countries. We're much higher than the Americans per capita, much higher than the British, much higher than Australia. And I think this is going to become, it's a difficult space for all political parties, particularly the small C conservative parties, generally speaking, have been cautious on this, more cautious than liberals.
Mm-hmm.
The problem for those small C conservative parties is they're also hyper focused on immigration on economics and jobs,
right.
and business. And so with the labor shortages and with the supply chain issues, all of these are linked to having people to do the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm fascinated with how this is going to play nationally on the political stage. Like, are the conservatives going to come out and say, we are going to slow immigration because our system can't handle it? A lot of the new Canadians who support conservatives will have something to say about that.
Right.
And they may not be supportive of that. Other parts of Canada may be supportive of that, but it's a complicated issue.
And I think as we talk about, Graham, too, and the issue of affordable housing right across the city, this province, this country, of where these people are going to stay. We talk about the labor shortage, but the implications on cities, the deficits, the
healthcare,
money, health care. We talk about all of these things that there are a ton of implications, and you see those numbers and what's going to happen. I think it's a positive sign. I didn't, you know, being at 40 million people for Canada is a mark, right? I know it's 39.5, 39.6 technically.
It's going to be 40 soon.
It's going to be 40 very soon if we're not there already in the first 3 months of 2023. So but it's interesting as you start, like you mentioned, I don't think we've had that full conversation yet. And now these are the numbers I'm sure that will now push some of that, and the federal government can just, it's just been numbers on paper. Now you look at the overall picture, and so it'll be, we'll start to delve into that today.
All right, Matt Scooby's up in just a few moments. CTV News at noon and at 5 o'clock. Thanks for this.
Thanks, G.
All right, we are back in just a moment on Ottawa at Work. I'm Graham Richardson in for Patricia Bull.